Hi, I'm Susan Schoeffer, your certified divorce coach and custody ally. This module is realization, and it's the first one. It's imperative that you realize where you are in divorce and that divorce is imminent. I don't know where you are in your process. Are you in the very beginning? Are you in the middle? Are you on your second or third attorney? It really doesn't matter. What matters is you have a realization of where you are and how to take care of yourself. Because if you know that divorce is imminent, you understand what's happening, you know you are getting a divorce, you know it's imperative that you take care of yourself, all of the other aspects of the divorce won't be as arduous. Is divorce frightening? Yes, it is. Is it challenging? Of course it is. Will there be days where you are just exhausted? Sure. But there is a way to navigate through your divorce, and this program will definitely get you on track. So let's start with module number one, which is realization. And again, after this module, you can watch or listen to the other modules in any order you wish, but it's imperative that you start with this one. So let's get started with realization. This module is about realization, how to take care of yourself, developing a support system. You're getting divorced. The first part of moving through the journey is realization. Oftentimes people come to me and they just don't know where to begin, and that's understandable. Your life has been turned upside down. And one of the things that we talk about is acknowledging the reality of divorce. And once you do that, and allowing others to help you, let yourself feel the pain of the divorce. Stop thinking about your spouse and moving those relationships that connected you with your spouse to another place in your life. Start having a new identity away from being the wife, the partner. And then search for new meaning. What would be the best for you? What would be your best life? All of those things come into play, but the first thing you have to do is come to the realization that divorce is imminent. And whether you are the one that precipitated the divorce or was your spouse, divorce is a life-changing event. And there's stress attached to it. There's loss attached to it. There's grief attached to it. And so in this module, I want to talk to you about the realization and how to begin the healing process, how to stop thinking about your spouse, the things to do to keep yourself healthy and get yourself to the best self you can be. And I know that sounds a little cheesy, a little corny, but think about it. Think about how would you be the best person you could be? I'd like you to take a moment. Take a sheet of paper or your laptop, or even if you just want to jot something down on a piece of paper. Imagine yourself 12 months from now, 1 year from now. Where would you like to be in your life? Where would you like to be physically? Meaning, where would you like to live? Think about the friendships you would like to have. Think about travel. Would you like to travel, take a trip? Think about relationships you have with your children. If you have younger children, think about some of the things that they are going through. Milestones. Are they graduating from lower school, middle school, high school? Do they have a recital? Do they have a football game? An exciting event that they have coming up in the not too far future, but far enough that you can project and think about that. So I want you to take some time and really think about where you'd like to be. Very often when we go through divorce, we think about where we are right now. I'm not where I want to be. This is not where I should be. I had no expectations for being this. But the truth is, you can't get to that place a year from now if you are so locked into what shoulda, coulda, woulda. And I talk about this a little bit because this is where we land. We think about the dreams we had for ourselves, what's happened to us, and why aren't we achieving those dreams? We think about how we plan to grow old with our spouse, spend the rest of our life with our spouse, and now we aren't. And everything switches up. Everything in our world switches up. We have to bring that in and come to the realization that this is happening. If you don't do that, you get stuck and you can't get to the other side. I know at this particular point, if you are in the early stages of your divorce, it is almost an impossible thing to wrap your mind around. If you don't, you will get stuck in this place where you just will get deeper and deeper into it and not be able to climb out. So I want to talk about this. I really want to get you into this realization, because once you get through this module, each of the other modules will make sense to you. You will embrace them and you will embark upon the instructions and the things we discuss to do within those modules. If you are resistant to realization, understanding what's happening, that you are getting a divorce, these modules will be fraught with angst and anxiety and fear. And we don't want that. We want you to be your best self. I want to tell you a story about a woman that I met many, many years ago, well before I was a certified divorce coach, but I was a private investigator at that time. And she'd been married for 40 years. And her husband up and left her. Her kids were already grown. She was all alone. All of her friends were married, and she was really in a funk. And of course, I was young. I had no kind of wisdom, so I just sat and listened to her talk. And we didn't cross paths again for about another year. And I ran into her actually at a Whole Foods, and she looked fantastic. She literally looked 10 years younger than she had the year before, and she had no facial work. This is not a facelift. This is not a facelift or any kind of fillers story. Not that anything's wrong with it, but this woman just was screaming happiness just in her face. And when I saw her, she came up, she gave me a big hug, and I said, "How are you?" She goes, "Oh my goodness, you would just, oh, I have so much to tell you." So we stopped. We left Whole Foods, we went over to the nearby Starbucks, and we sat down, and she told me about what she had done the previous year. I could not wrap my head around it. She had gone to South America, and we live in the United States. She had been to Europe twice. She had actually signed up to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I mean, there was nothing this woman was not doing. I never mentioned her ex-husband. She never mentioned it until we were leaving. And she said, "I didn't realize how unhappy I was for 40 years until I became very happy." And I said, "Nah, you had good years." She goes, "No, I didn't. These were 40 miserable years." Now, if you spoke to her the year before, she talked about how they were the best 40 years. He took away the best 40 years of her life. She didn't know what she was going to do. Her life was miserable. How dare he do this to her? And yet now she had a different perspective. And that's what I want to tell you. This is about perspective. If you are the person who initiated the divorce, obviously you want to be divorced. If you are not the one who initiated it, the issue really lies in that person's made a decision. They no longer want to be married to you. But that does not mean your life is over. And that doesn't mean you can't be your best self. So let's get started. And the first place to start is how to stop thinking about your ex-spouse or ex-spouse-to-be. I'm going to say the word spouse, but we know that means you're soon to be ex-spouse. Or even for some of you, you may already be divorced. So I want to start with the do nots. And the reason why I want to start with the do nots, meaning the things not to do, is because we get so heavily entrenched in what do we need to do? Empowering, what do we need to do? And oftentimes it is the do nots that sabotage us. So I want to start with number one, and I'm going to number these for you. There's a total of seven. So let's start with number one. do not visit places, restaurants, concert halls, sports arenas where you and your spouse frequented. Doing this only serves to keep you stuck in the past instead of moving forward with your life. This does not mean that you won't be able to visit those places in the future. But if you do it now, all you are doing is clinging on to what was, rehashing memories, living in the past. Don't go there. No need to do that. Don't exacerbate your pain by going to places where you used to go with your spouse. I guarantee you, it's not cathartic. You really will feel miserable. That moves me to number two. Do not listen to your special songs you and your spouse had. You listen to day in and day out. All that does is keep you in the past, prolong your pain, and interferes with your recovery. If you want to do that, take one day, maybe on a weekend, maybe one night, listen to all the songs, cry your heart out, scream to the wind, and then that's it. You don't have to listen over and over to the songs that he used to sing to you on vacation. Serves no purpose. Number three, do not start calling your spouse's family and friends. And I know this is tough. Sometimes you shared friends. I've often met couples who, for years, Saturday night was date night. They went out with certain friends and did that for years, sometimes decades. So obviously you would have a relationship formed with people that you've had that kind of intimacy with. You've watched your children grow up. You've gone to each other's children's graduations, weddings, whatever. But there's no need for that now, especially if your spouse has moved on in a way that you haven't yet. So if they have a new love interest, what is the purpose of calling family and friends? To get the scoop? You already know the scoop. They are dating somebody else. It doesn't serve any purpose to start questioning, interrogating these people. Not to mention it makes them feel very uncomfortable. They love you both. And even if they don't, they will perceive your questioning as pulling them into the middle between you and your spouse. So don't do it. If you are still friends and you want to be friends with them, terrific. That's great. Don't talk about your spouse. As far as your spouse's family, it's possible that you were best of friends with his mother or father, or maybe his sister was like the sister you never had, or you were best buds with his aunt. Back off a little bit. You may even want to drop them a line or email, say, look, I love you, I will always love you, but for right now, it may be a good idea for me and you not to see or talk to each other. When the divorce is finalized and he's moved on and I've moved on, or she's moved on and I've moved on, then we can chat up. At least they will understand that you are not abandoning the relationship, but at the same token, you want to keep them out of the crossfire if there is any, or even if there isn't, but there can be perceived that they are, you know, creating an allegiance with you by talking to you. So please, just don't call your spouse's friends or family for a while. There's no need to do it. You don't need to know how he or she is doing. Number four, do not call your spouse's new partner. There's no reason for that. If your spouse is dating somebody, what is the purpose? Do you want to tell them that he's a cheating, lying, snake in the grass, horrible person? Well, if you do, there's no guarantee you will look like the bittered spouse. And if he or she is saying anything nasty about you, calling the new love interest will only confirm it. If your spouse is a liar, a cheater, snake in the grass, all of the above, their new love interest is not going to believe you. They are now walking around in rose-colored glasses. They think your spouse is the next second coming. They are not going to believe you. You are going to look bitter. The only purpose that serves is to make you look foolish, and you don't want that. You don't want to look bitter, jealous, envious, hateful. Again, if your spouse is a bad person, the new love interest will find out sooner or later. They don't need any coaxing by you. Number five, do not make a habit of driving by your spouse's new residence or their new partner's home. Don't show up at their work. Sometimes people feel the need to just sit in front of the house, see where he or she is going. That becomes very stalker behavior. It also takes up your time. And I want to say something here that a very wise person said to me. Don't give it too much exercise. Isn't that fabulous? Don't give this too much exercise. Getting into the car, driving over to his or her house to sit outside is precious time that you don't have. Look at it this way. If somebody said to you, you have 24 hours left to live, do you really want to spend four or five of them sitting in front of your spouse's house, waiting to see what time they come home, waiting to see if they have a boyfriend or girlfriend? I doubt seriously you would want to spend your last 24 hours on earth doing that. So don't do it now. Number six, do not, and please listen to this carefully, do not write letters, emails, send nasty texts to your spouse. Please don't do it. These emails, usually, the ones I've seen, are usually a rehashing of all the terrible things they've done. If you think that they will read this letter, number one, and say, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know she felt this way. I didn't know she was mad because I cheated. You're mistaken. Of course they know why you're mad. And more than likely, before you got to this point in the relationship, you have given them your laundry list of grievances. They know what they are. Why rehash them in an email? More importantly, no texts, no social media. Because here's the thing. If you are sending nasty emails or texts, it will get into the hands of your spouse's attorney, and therefore it will get into the hands of the judge. And you don't want that. That's the last thing that you want. If you have to communicate with your spouse, maybe they have to pick the children up from school, he or she has to pick the children up from school, then factual. Would you like me to pick up Jennifer from school today? Is it your time to pick Jennifer up from school today? Perfect communication. What you don't do is, if you weren't so busy sleeping around with your whore girlfriend, maybe you would remember to pick Jennifer up from school. That has a whole different dynamic, so you want to be very careful that that's not what you say or that's how you come across. The last part of the don'ts that I want to talk about is social media. I have an entire module on social media in this program, and I will go through some of the things not to do. I am shocked. Well, let me reframe that. I'm surprised that people post the things that they do on social media. So let me talk a little bit about what I mean. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Do not use those as avenues to vent about how you feel about your spouse and or love interest, should they have one, or their parents or their family. If you are so angered, write a letter to yourself. Send it to yourself. Don't start with the emails, the texts, and definitely not on social media. I was divorced over a decade ago, and at the time, my attorney said, if there's anything that you don't like on email, text, let me know. Now what they say is, what is on social media? I cannot express to you how detrimental it will be to your case if you put something disparaging about your spouse and or their love interest or family or friends or bosses, whatever, on any kind of social media. It will come back to you. And this is not something that you want to have to answer to. This is not something you want to explain to a judge. Because here's the thing. If your divorce is a healthy, non-combative divorce, fantastic. You have really hit the nail on the head. This is lucky. You are a very fortunate person. If there's an ounce of contention, posting things on Facebook will only escalate the contention. And if there is no contention on the part of your spouse and you create it, you are going to sink yourself at the hearing. Because things that you post on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter will definitely come back to you. And then you will have to explain it away. So, for example, you are always a very calm, collective person. You never lose your temper. And if you do, it's very rarely. Your spouse always pushed your buttons, but you were so great about not letting him or her get to you. And you just always been calm and collective, and you just never really got yourself rattled. Your spouse, on the other hand, just wild card, always just started so much. And no matter how many problems they started for you, you were able to walk away. But now, just now, for some crazy reason, you decided to put something on Facebook about his girlfriend and what a bitch she is and how much you hate her and you don't want her around your children. She's a criminal. And you just absolutely decimate her character. Well, your spouse tells a judge that you're crazy, batshit. Well, you've kind of proved that you are, even if this was just an isolated incident. So when you feel the need to do any of this, remember, it will be seen and it won't be able to be unseen. So no Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram, nothing about your spouse, nothing publicly about your spouse. So you have all the don'ts. So it comes down to, well, what do you do? What do you do? How do you stop thinking about your spouse? Well, there's a couple things you can do. I made a chart that I provided for you in this module, and I find this to be very helpful for people. Remember what I mentioned a few moments ago about how to start your life without being partnered with your spouse? You know, what to do, some new things. So I have three columns. One is hobbies, one is refresh my space, and the other is fun time with family and friends. So you don't have to do it right now, but I would like to give you some examples, and I will flash up this sheet up on the screen here. So for example, maybe you decide to take a knitting class, or you want to go to a museum, you want to join a lecture series, or you decide that you are going to join a giving circle, or you are going to take a yoga class. Those are all things that are hobbies, something that you want to join. I said to one of my clients once, pick 1 week a month, just 1 week a month that you do something. A client came back, she goes, what about one thing a week? I said, go for it. And she did. She did an Italian cooking class. She did a yoga class the following week. The third week, she actually did like a makeover to learn how to do makeup. And then fourth, get this, ice skating. And each week she took a class. And 1 week it was Monday nights. Next week it was Tuesday nights. The next week, Wednesday nights. And the fourth week, Thursday nights. And she just knew that once a week she had a hobby. And she said to me, there are some nights I just don't want to go. And then I get out there and I do it and I have so much fun. And this is something I never would have done when I was married. Now, some of you may say, wait, I've always had hobbies. Fantastic. Make sure you stay with your hobbies. It's really important. It gets you out of the house. It gets you with other people. And you're improving on yourself. You're doing things for you. The other way to stop thinking about your spouse is actually to refresh your space. Now, I've said this to people before, and they're like, what do you mean, refresh my space? I have to redo my house. I'm like, no. Refresh your space. So what I've done to help you thinking in this way is I have two other
little worksheets. One is how to refresh your living space. So I've given some examples here, and I will go through some of them here with you just so it can give you an idea if you're sort of developing a mental block and you don't know what I mean by refreshing your space. First things first, buy some new bathroom towels. Not expensive proposition. That in and of itself may just give your bathroom a new lift, new color scheme. So if your bathroom has always been turquoise, maybe now and you have turquoise towels, turquoise soap, maybe just change that color motif. Maybe that's all you need to do. Put some flowers in the bathroom. Set out some decorative soaps to give that bathroom your touch. It's now your bathroom. I'm not going to negate the fact that as you take everything out of the bathroom that may belong to your spouse, change the towels, change the soaps, it may give you a pang of sadness. There's no doubt. But it's time. It's time for you to make this bathroom your own. It doesn't take a lot of money. Doesn't take a ton of creativity. Just a switch up. And the same thing applies to the kitchen. Buy some new kitchen towels. Replace the kitchen flatware dishes. Purchase a new welcome mat for your front door. Right there. People come into your house. It's now new. Your welcome mat, they are coming into your space. You are welcoming them into your home. That is now yours, just you. Throw pillows for the living room sofa. They always give a room a new look. Again, not something super expensive. New photos. If you are starting to do, and I hope you are starting to do some fun things with friends and family, everybody has cameras now. And you can put photos in new frames, new pictures. Place candles around the house. Paint your bedroom. Plant flowers in your garden. Replace that old toaster or purchase a new juicer, something you've always wanted. A client of mine said she always wanted a KitchenAid mixer. You know, the ones that are like $400 or $500. And her husband never wanted her to have one. She said, I went out. She told me where she went. Okay, I'll share. Williams-Sonoma. And she bought herself a KitchenAid mixer. She was so happy about that. She showed me pictures. Just something like that is so refreshing. Buy new bed linens. Sometimes people do that. You know, they just feel like, oh, I'm going to take all the bed linens off and have new ones. So just a little bit of refreshing your space. Maybe that's all it takes just to now confirm that this is something for you. In addition to these ideas, I've also provided a worksheet in this module for you to enter some of your own ideas for refreshing your space. They surely don't have to be mine. Another thing I want to mention here is go through your house and take down pictures of you and your spouse. You don't have to throw them away. You don't have to draw mean faces on your spouse. You don't have to cut your spouse out of the pictures, but put them away. Put them in a box, in the attic, downstairs, under your bed, wherever you want to put them. There will be a time where you may want to give them to your children, grandchildren, put them in storage far away, or even throw them away. But for now, just put them away. Having them sitting around or on your walls is just a reminder that you're getting divorced. And you will always have those historical times in your face, in your living space. So please take them down. I want to talk about self-care because I think this is really an important thing to address. And before I really jump on that bandwagon, I want to mention the importance of reconnecting with maybe old friends, spending time with the friends you have and family, and put this also in the chart. Because when you have these people in your life, it really does promote the self-care that I'm going to get ready to talk to you about. Because this really is about you now. And many of us have spent our entire lives taking care of children, taking care of the house, taking care of our spouse, and we forget us. We really do. And the other part about this is we have this notion that when we take care of the children and we take care of our spouse and we take care of the house and we take care of the garden and we do our job and all we have left is a nanosecond at the end of the week, just a nanosecond for ourselves, we feel so noble. Well, look at what I've done for everybody and I don't spend an ounce of time on myself. But we are not sacrificial lambs. Take care of yourself. And by reuniting with family and friends, spending more time with them, there is a joyfulness. So I want you to think about planning some time, maybe day trips with your children, maybe get together with a girlfriend or an aunt that you haven't seen in a while. Or what about a trip that you always wanted to take? Look at a bucket list you used to make that you never did. One of my clients said that his wife just would never travel. Never travel. She would not venture out more than an hour away from their home. She just had this thing about not traveling. And after they got divorced, he said, I've always wanted to go to Iceland. I always wanted to then get on this boat and see whales in Greenland. And I said, and why can't you do that? He goes, well, I can't, but you know, my wife, she never wanted to go and I didn't get accustomed. I don't know where to begin. And I said, where to begin? We have the internet. Go on the internet. And he said, yeah. Sometimes we don't even think about these things. So this is another way to stop thinking about your spouse. Make these new memories, new trips, new things with your friends. So again, go back to the activities chart and make some hobbies for yourself. Think about refreshing your space. Spend time with friends and family. See how you can fill up this chart. Go through the list of ways to refresh your space. And then jot down some of your own ideas. You will see that you're already underway to realizing what happened, realizing what's going to happen, and make your own life. Before I proceed with focusing just on you, just on your self-care, your physical and emotional body, I'd like you to take a look at the Holmes and Ross Stress Scale, which is in the Divorce Recovery Ladder Guidebook and also in your module, this module. The Holmes and Ross Stress Scale has been used for so many years, if not decades, and it basically shows the stress units that are involved with major life changes. And we know that these kind of stressors can turn into physical and or emotional health problems. And if you notice, the first life change is death of a spouse. But notice what number two is. It's divorce. Number three is marital separation. So obviously you have a marital separation and then you have a divorce. So you're really up there. You're really up there on the stress scale. So I want you to start focusing on you, how to take care of yourself. And this is the piece of it. You have to do it. Whether you like it or not, you have to do it. You have to make time for yourself. And people have asked me, well, you don't know how it is. And I come back with, yeah, remember, I've been divorced. I was divorced and I had two kids and I didn't have parents and family nearby and it was me. It was me taking care of my children. And what I did, and I will share this with you, is I got up every morning at 5 o'clock and I worked out from 5 to 6 o'clock because I knew that once my day got underway, working out, practicing yoga was not going to happen. Because my children were younger and I didn't have family nearby, taking a class at night just was not possible. So I worked within the framework of what I had. Did I like getting up an hour early? Actually, I didn't. But as time moved on, not only did I enjoy it, not only did I feel better, but I also found that it just became a part of who I am. Now here I am, many years post-divorce. My children are adults, and I still get up early and work out every single day. So this does become habitual, and it becomes part of taking care of yourself. Nobody says that you have to join a gym, go to it 5 days a week, get on the spin bike for an hour, lift weights for an hour, take 5 yoga classes. Nobody's telling you to do that. If you want to join a gym, that's fantastic. But if you just want to walk around your neighborhood, that's okay too. So I want to talk about a couple things before we get into charting what you can do to monitor how you take care of yourself. I want to talk about a couple areas of taking care of yourself, and that will include the support system that I talked about earlier in this module. I want to start with diet, because diet really is critical. When we go through divorce, we have a tendency to lose weight. And I've had so many clients tell me about, you know, dropping the divorce pounds. And it really is true. But you gain it back, for sure. And one of the things that happens is we lose our appetite. We don't want to eat. And you just force yourself to eat. Or you really don't want to eat, but by mid-morning you're at work and you like go downstairs to the little store and you get a muffin, and then you don't really want to have lunch. You don't really feel that well. Then later in the day you have like a bag of chips, and then you come home and you make dinner for the kids, and the kids eat. You sit there and you just kind of pick at your food, and then you get them into bed, and later at night you have some ice cream. You do that for a while and you start to feel kind of cruddy, and you pack on the pounds, and you just don't feel so great. So this is the time to focus in on your diet. Again, nothing crazy. I'm not a dietitian. I'm not going to give a lot of time to how you should eat, because I don't know how you should eat. But the general rule of thumb is lean meats, if you eat meat, fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, lots of water. Take a multivitamin just to help boost your minimum requirements of vitamins and minerals. If you feel at this time you want to meet with a dietitian, or you want to get more drastic with your diet, that's all very well and good. Seek out the appropriate professional to help you through that, and then monitor your diet and see how that's impacting your wellness. But again, I'm trying to focus in on having you look at your diet, how it may be impacting you positively, negatively, and more importantly, to not get caught in the loop of just eating junk food all the time or not eating much at all. Another area of self-care is rest. And believe me, I am the queen of, really? Did I sleep last night? I don't think so. So I am really hard-pressed to tell you about rest. But for most people, 6 to 9 hours a night is what's required for them to function the next day. So try to carve out time to get rest. If you are well rested, you will be able to make much better decisions. And with divorce comes decisions. You will find that in the next few modules. Decisions about what to do with the children, how to find the right attorney, what about finances, how to prepare for your day in court. These are all things that take decision making. And if you are so exhausted, you will be clouded by exhaustion and won't be able to make the proper decisions. So try and get rest. Even if you have a hard time sleeping, get into bed with some Netflix or television or a book, but just get that physical rest. I want to now talk about alcohol and drugs. Divorce is a time where people find themselves under stress, anxiety, depression. And sometimes they self-medicate with alcohol, and sometimes they go to the doctors and they get something to help them sleep, something to help them deal with their anxiety, depression. And I am not a fan or not a fan of doing that. You have to do whatever helps you. I do want to talk more about alcohol and drug abuse. If you are having a problem with alcohol abuse or drug abuse, this is the time to get yourself some help. If there are children involved, I will tell you unequivocally, judges do not favor children to be left alone with parents who are under the influence of alcohol and drugs. It's just a fact. There are very few times, if any, that I can ever speak to what a judge will or won't do. This is one of the times where I can say, hands down, how a judge will perceive a parent who is abusing drugs or alcohol. If you are even remotely close to, or beginning, or even entrenched in a custody battle, and you are abusing drugs and alcohol, your spouse will definitely share that with their attorney. And more than likely, their attorney will not say to them, I'm so sorry your spouse is having troubles with drugs and alcohol. Let's do whatever we can to help them through this very rocky journey. Not going to happen. More than likely, what their attorney will say is something like this. Really? They're using drugs and alcohol? They're a drug addict? They're drunk? Okay, great. This is all we need. You'll see to it. We'll get the kids. You're going to get custody. This is something hard to hear, and I hate to use this language. I hate to be this brazen and this tough, but the truth is, that's what's going to happen. You have to make sure that if you are under any kind of influence or you feel like you're struggling, for your best interest and definitely in the best interest of your children, please seek out a drug counselor, join AA. Do something, because here's the thing. I want you to really hear this. If you're misusing drugs or alcohol, that can be used against you, and you can lose custody of your children. If you do have a problem and you seek out help, at least if it's brought up in court, you can say, yes, Your Honor, I did have an alcohol problem, but I've been in AA for 2 months. I've been in AA. I've been dry for 6 months. I've been in AA. Please do that. Dot your I's and cross your T's. Too many times I see people who didn't do that, and then they say to the judge, well, I haven't had a drink in a couple weeks, or I haven't taken drugs in a couple weeks. That doesn't mean anything to the judge. It means nothing. If you have something to substantiate the fact that you have not been using, it is critical that you bring that to court. Make sure your attorney has it. And let me say something, an aside about your attorney. If you do have an alcohol or a drug abuse challenge, do not keep that from your attorney. I promise you, your spouse will make it known, and your attorney will be very upset that you didn't share that. So please, I can't express enough to get help for any kind of substance abuse problem. I also want to talk about making an appointment to see your physician. Divorce is very stressful, and it's very nice in the beginning for you to have a physical, have some blood work run, let them see where you are, a snapshot of your physical being and your blood work. And so that if anything goes awry over the next few months or years, they have a baseline. You also want to talk to your physician about what is going on in your life, that they know that you are no longer married or you're getting divorced, especially your medical records. Next of kin, person to touch base with in the event of emergency with you, who to contact, contact person, that all changes. But that's just paperwork. You want to sit down with your doctor and let he or she know what's going on with you, that you are going through this divorce, that you are having a major life change. And that leads me to counseling and therapy. It is never a bad idea to go into therapy. It can only help. And I've had people say to me, I've never gone to a therapist. I'm not going to start that now. What good are they? Well, if you find a really nice family therapist, especially one that focuses in or specializes on divorce. And they're out there. By all means. I mean, nobody says you have to go every week, but it's very nice to meet with somebody maybe monthly, once a month, and just talk about what you're going through. Get an idea if your feelings are in the right place or if they're misplaced. A therapist would be able to recognize if you're experiencing anxiety or depression or something that they see as a red flag that you may need some assistance or talk a little bit more about what's going on so that you can get over some hurdles, emotional hurdles that are holding you back. So it never hurts to go into counseling. So that's another part of self-care. I also want to talk about the police. This is not something I really like to talk about, but I will mention it here because it is part of self-care. I do talk about getaway plans in the module retaliation if your spouse should become contentious or your divorce goes into the high conflict zone. So for now, I won't go into that, but I do want to mention the police because if you have any domestic abuse or if you've had any in the past, the likelihood of encountering domestic abuse escalates when you leave a spouse. It escalates as you are going through the divorce process. Many times you may hear about spouses getting contentious or they may get violent during times of separation. And that's because some people, for whatever reason, when the world is getting shaken up, they retaliate or they get violent or they start to stalk or they send out nasty emails. Whatever it is that drives them to be contentious, they become that way. And if you notice that in your spouse, I believe the best thing you can do to ensure safety is to notify your police. Let them know who you are, where you live, and what's happened. I'm not saying a full-blown report. Now, if your spouse should get physically violent with you, if your spouse starts sending you emails or nasty texts, threatens you, by all means, file a report. But if you've just had a history of domestic violence, nothing per se going on now, but you just feel like that a possibility could arise, go to your local police, the one in your community, the one that if you called 911, they would come from that particular police station. Get to know some of the police officers. Let them know who you are. Almost every county jurisdiction has a domestic violence abuse officer. And very often, that domestic violence abuse officer holds workshops, community sessions, speaks at hospitals on recognizing domestic violence and how to keep yourself safe in the event of domestic violence. So please seek that out. You don't want to know this when you're running from a spouse. You want to have all this information ahead of time. It's a great part of self-care. I want to close this module with emotional support from family and friends. I think that's really a critical part of self-care. It's also, I don't want to say complaint, but it's also the challenge that I find people have as they're going through divorce. People always feel as though they get abandoned. And I mentioned this in another module, and I want to bring it up again here. And that is, you have all these friends, you and your spouse have couples that you go out with, and then you guys split up, and some of the friends go like to his side or her side, and the others come to your side, and everybody rallies around you. They offer to take your kids to school. They offer to help you with groceries. Sometimes they bring food over. It's almost as though there is a death. People really rally around when you go through something like this. But here's what I also hear. After a couple weeks, people sort of go away and you feel alone. You don't know where to turn. You don't want to bother people. They go back to their adult lives. You go back home, around the children at night, weekends. Children get older. They have their friends, their parties, whatever they do on weekends, their school events. Your home. Your children go off to college and have their own lives in your home alone. You wave to your neighbors, but they were there when your spouse and you split up. Wow, they used to invite you to card games, or they used to invite you to come over for picnics, and now you look outside and they're on picnics and you don't remember getting an invitation. It's hard. And that sometimes happens. And this has nothing to do with you personally. It really doesn't. It has to do with everything with the person that you're wondering about. Like, well, why don't they like me anymore? It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with they feel uncomfortable. They may feel like, how can I be friends with her? Because my husband's like best friends with her husband. I don't know how we can still be friends. It really has to do with their level of comfort, which becomes very low after divorce. But that doesn't change how you feel. That doesn't change the fact that you feel alone. It doesn't change the fact that you wonder who you can talk to. So I've designed what I call how to develop a support system. You do not have to have a mound of friends. If you do, that's fantastic. But I think as far as a support system is concerned, it's essential that you confide your situation to one or two confidants, maybe three. And those are people that you can really share what's going on in your lifetime. You feel really comfortable sharing how you feel, what's going on. Talk about parts of your divorce that just make you feel isolated. Not necessarily somebody that you call every single day and bend their ear and get them to the point where they feel overwhelmed and they can't hear it any longer, but just somebody that you know you can call and say, you know, I'm having a bad day. I need some cheering up. So gather up a few people that you feel comfortable, that you can consider them confidants. If you have any kind of domestic abuse, your spouse has threatened you, sending you emails, threatening you through emails or text, you need to make a pact with the check-in person so that once a day you check in with them. And that if they don't hear from you once a day, they need to reach out to you. And then if you don't respond to them, they know that there's trouble. And this is just a safeguard system. One person, a check-in. A text check-in. You don't have to get into a long-winded two-hour conversation with them. I mean, if they want that, you want that, that's fine. But more importantly, it's about safety. So that if they don't hear from you by 10 o'clock at night, they know it's time to worry. So work something out, a particular time of day. It doesn't have to be to the minute. It doesn't have to be every morning at 10 a.m., although it could be. But just something so that there is a check-in. And they know that you're safe. And then if you aren't safe, that they know they can call the appropriate authorities to get you some help. I want to also talk about people who are not supportive of you. And this is a big one. And I hear this frequently where people say, you know what? Everybody's on his side. They're saying terrible things about me. And I just want them to understand what I'm going through. They don't know. He cheated. Stop. Stop. If they are not supportive of you, what do you care? Easier for me to say than for you to feel. I get that. I get that. Divorce is not just about the loss of the marriage. Sometimes it's loss of family. Sometimes it's loss of friends. That goes with the territory. That goes without any further explanation. But I hope for you is that if people are not supportive, you don't spend your time trying to convince them otherwise. So if there's a group of friends or former friends who say, well, even though he cheated, I can understand why. You're impossible to get along with. No explanation. Okay, you're impossible to get along with. He cheated. Move on. Because if they are not going to be supportive of you, you don't need them in your world. Right now, you're fragile and you need people who are supportive of you. A therapist once told me that the divorce experience would show me who my real friends are, and I want to say that to you also. So let me repeat that. The divorce experience will show you who your real friends are. Divorce creates a division in friendships, in families. You can't take it personally. Your true friends will stay your friend. People who don't stay your friends never were. So, this now completes our realization, taking care of yourself module. You have a lot to do. There's a lot for you to go back and look at, how to pick some hobbies for yourself, how to refresh your space, how to pull some friends together, family, meet new people, travel, day trips, whatever it is you want to be your best self. So get started with realization. Start on that bottom rung of the ladder. Recognize what's happened. Take the bull by the horns and get moving to your best self.